It's Couch Potatoes across the country, around the world, and on the internet. I'm Kevin Cook.
And I'm Emily McFadden.
And, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies. I want to, first of all, welcome Emily as a guest host to Fat Guys at the Movies. She's not a guy, so tough beans. We lie on this show all the time.
I can't be Neil today.
You can be Neil, but I bet you don't have as much facial hair as he does.
No.
I hope you don't have as much facial hair as he does.
I've been working on it, but I'm failing to do.
That's true. Well, Robin Williams' arms have less facial hair than Neil does, so he is a hairy dude.
But, I trust your word on it.
First of all, Emily, tell us where you're from and just give us a little bit of information about you. Your first time being on the show. Welcome.
Well, basically, all I do is I call myself a movie reviewer, but I'm not really officially one. But you can I review films with a couple of other folks, which you can find at a podcast called Cue the Film, which you can listen to at cuethefilm.blogspot.com.
Cool. Yeah. And you don't like 2001. That's your claim to fame. You don't like 2001 and you love Joss Whedon.
Yeah. Yeah. You knew that I didn't like 2001. Oh, yeah. And yeah, I don't.
I did my research. I have my FBI file on you.
I know. They're threatening to arrest me because I didn't like it.
Yeah. Well, you know, we can't all be perfect. But anyways, now that we know where Emily's from, where you can get a hold of us, website, fatguysatthemovies.com. You can go to iTunes and search Fat Guys at the Movies, and we pop right up. You can also email us at fatguys@filmschoolrejects.com, and you can leave us a voicemail at 614-388-8735. Emily's just sitting in for Neil because Neil had some personal issues he had to take care of this week. I think it had to do with some sort of operation he was getting in the Netherlands, but we won't talk about that. We should probably move on to the movies. And I do apologize, first of all, on the air here to Emily for springing this on her at the last minute. I needed a co-host, and she rose to the occasion. So in the process of rising to the occasion, you didn't see any of the movies this week.
Well, I'll see District 9 eventually. I'll give a by proxy review. I'll go back in time and tell you what I think.
Okay, well, that's good. Yeah, but there's no difference here anyways because Neil never sees a movie, so.
Exactly. That's another reason about how I'm like Neil, unfortunately.
Exactly.
Nothing's changed.
That neck beards. But let's start off. We got like 5 movies opening wide this weekend, so we better jump right in. The first one is, as Emily already mentioned, District 9, the unofficial sequel to Julie and Julia, in which a race of aliens has been kept in a refugee area in Johannesburg for 20 more or more years until they're forced to evacuate.
We're coming to you from the entrance of District 9, the refugee camp set up to separate aliens from the general population.
I don't know, this has got the markings there of, so it's definitely alien, but it's not a weapon.
We're seeing heavily armed forces being deployed into District 9.
Nobody really knew what this place was.
Now first, before I give my review, Emily, what are your thoughts about the movie in terms of just the hype and the leading up to it?
Well, you know, it looks a lot like Halo, doesn't it?
Well, Neil Blomkamp was supposed to direct Halo, wasn't he?
Yeah, so didn't they actually get like 5 months into filming before he actually, the disputes decided that there wouldn't be a Halo movie? So, you know, good on him. He has a lot of material he can use. I saw the short film he did.
Mm-hmm.
And plus, I'm a really probably a bigger Peter Jackson fan than I probably should be.
Yeah.
Hey, Heavenly Creatures, man, was awesome. But
His early stuff was great, but wow, King Kong, he just gets gratuitous by the end of just spending too much time in the movie.
Yeah, but everyone does that. I think, I don't want to get on a tangent, but okay. Regardless, I was really excited to see this film because I'm a huge science fiction fan, and the short film is really well done, and it just looked really cool.
Okay. Well, it is, and I will tell you, it is cool. What's neat about it is it kind of falls in that category of that very visceral, almost like action film cinema verite, where the cameras are right there, everything's happening, almost documentary style. But unlike movies like Cloverfield or Quarantine or The Blair Witch Project, it's just shot in that style, and only part of it exists in that style of news cameras. But what's brilliant about it is is it really, it's speculative fiction at its best, where it looks at something and it applies a fantastic concept and it allows us to look at a mirror at ourselves as humans and as, you know, it uses interspecies in terms of interracial for all the issues that are going on there. And you have to look at it and say, you know, would this be different? Would we react different? Would the South Africans, what the South Africans allegedly do, would that be different than the Americans or Canadians or French or German or whatever? But it also works as an action flick because it has some really awesome moments and an incredible alien gun that blows things up.
Sweet.
Yeah. District 9 is a lot of fun. It's not for the squeamish, and it has certain allusions to other famous movies like David Cronenberg's The Fly. There's a very Fly-esque scene in that movie that I absolutely loved. So, I give District 9 totally rocks, in my opinion.
So you totally didn't throw up on the screen like some people claim they did for Cloverfield?
No, I didn't. It wasn't as jarring as Cloverfield because Cloverfield was just that video camera portion, although I almost threw up when I saw the Blair Witch Project. And I know the public, somebody I know almost threw up during one of Paul Greengrass's movies, which will go unnamed so the publicist isn't revealed. If you don't like that herky-jerky stuff, you may want to avoid it, but it's worth checking out. I really say, I recommend it in a big way.
Okay, cool.
So that gets a rocks for me. Let's move on to the next one, which is Ponyo, and I'm not even going to try to pronounce the guy's name because I'm terrible at it. It's that Japanese guy who directed Spirited Away.
Oh, wow. Machiavelli?
Hiro Michiaki or whatever. I don't know how to pronounce his name.
Oh, sorry. I'm thinking of another animator that has some.
Yeah, you're thinking. No, that's okay. I embarrassed myself too. But this one's about a young Japanese boy who befriends a small fish-like creature in a small town.
Mom! A goldfish!
I saved her.
She wasn't like any other fish.
She might be magic.
This fish.
I will be a human too!
Is getting her wish.
Huh?
Mom! She's a girl now!
Sasuke! Look at me!
Yeah!
Hey, this is fun!
Ponyo!
Sasuke!
This one, it's rated G, and it's released by Studio Ghibli and distributed by Walt Disney. And this is just a sweet, lovable, heartwarming film. And I took my son, who's 8, to see it, and he was just mesmerized and fascinated with this movie. If you've seen some of the Ghibli stuff that they've done, it reminds me a lot of My Neighbor Totoro. Have you seen that movie?
No.
No, it's a fantastic movie where it's just it's a sweet little story about a kid that befriends a magical creature, and it's a very self-contained story, but very just adorable and sweet. And if you like the stuff from Studio Ghibli, if you've seen Spirited Away and Howl's Moving Castle, Totoro, and that sort of thing, that's the very, very similar. Only it's not as high concept and dark as like Howl's Moving Castle is. It's much more friendly and sweet and much more appropriate for a younger audience. So for this one, I give it a totally rocks as well. You haven't seen it though, Emily.
No, I'm sorry. I don't know if I will though, because is it in limited release?
It's going wide enough. It's going like 1,000 theaters or more. So it's going to open in Columbus, which is where Fat Guys is headquartered. So, mm-hmm. With that, we got to go to a break.
Sweet.
And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies. And we went through District 9 and Ponyo, which both got rocks from me, which, again, you're familiar with the Fat Guys rating scale, aren't you, Emily?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Totally rocks, rocks, kind of sucks, really
well,
sucks.
Well, really, it's rocks or sucks, but Neil started throwing in the totally. I don't know what that means.
What about amazingly rock or uber rock or something like that?
I mean, you can get to degrees, I guess. You know, it's like I'll see a movie, I'll be like, that's a 4-star movie. And they're like, great. I'm like, that's out of 10. But no, it's, yeah, so rocks and sucks.
Sucks as much as King Kong didn't. No.
No. Wow. Going after your Peter Jackson.
Sucks as much as The Happening and Transformers 2.
I liked The Happening. I see. I'm a huge fan of M. Night Shyamalan, though. So
you know, I think he can direct. I don't think he can write.
I don't think he can direct actors. I mean, I thought the
oh,
acting
yeah,
the
Village,
in The Happening.
Oh my gosh. Okay.
Well, I thought Bryce Dallas Howard was good in The Village.
Everyone talked like this because apparently in the 18th century, that's how you talked.
But like The Happening, the acting, I have to say the acting in The Happening, some of the worst acting that was on screen last year. but I just enjoy, I like his stuff. There are certain directors that I just will like their stuff no matter what. And this is the thing, going back to like Transformers 2, like I listened to your Cue the Film podcast had a section on Transformers 2. And what bothers me about Michael Bay fans is for them, it's like, no, it's awesome and everything's awesome and this movie is awesome. And there's no like, there's no condition to this. Whereas I like watch movies from like Rennie Harlan and Roland Emmerich and Paul W.S. Anderson. And I will be the first to admit that these guys make crap. I mean, they will make some of the worst movies ever, but I will forgive it. Mm-hmm. Whereas fans of Michael Bay will be just like, oh, everything he does is just awesome, and it's the greatest movie ever. It's awesome.
It's the stereotype of a fanboy, isn't it? Not that I'm saying that all fanboys are like that, but there's sort of this thing where there are people who are just in love with Michael Bay, but there mm-hmm. are also people who are just in love with other directors, like, you know, Steven Spielberg can never do wrong.
Yeah, but see, I like Star Wars. I grew up with Star Wars. I grew up with the Star Wars movies, and when they made the prequels, I'm like, yeah, okay, yeah, of course the pod race went on forever, and there was maybe 20 minutes of story in the first one, and Jake Lloyd was a terrible actor, and Jar Jar Binks was awful, and Hayden Christensen couldn't act, and it looked like, you know, Liam Neeson and Ewan McGregor were just cringing as they delivered the dialogue, but it was Star Wars. But I would be the first one to say, I love Star Wars, but I recognize all the flaws. The people with the Michael Bay fanboys, they don't recognize the flaws. They just are like, oh, no, it's awesome.
Well, I do know one particular person who was a Michael Bay fan, not a Michael Bay film. He was a Michael Bay fan and particularly didn't really care for Transformers 2.
Yeah. Yeah. I think Michael Bay is just getting a little bit into himself more than anything
I think
else.
He's a better producer than he is a director. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Where I think
he's
better at, you know, coming up with these great ideas, but I think he needs someone to whisper in his ear to tone it down.
What I'd love to see Michael Bay, I'd like to see Michael Bay co-direct a movie with somebody.
Yeah.
Where they're like, okay, you take care of the action and the general look of the film, but let's have somebody else come here and fix the story and the characters and the dialogue.
Who do you think could co-direct with him?
Not M. Night Shyamalan.
Director M. Night Shyamalan and Michael Bay come together to make Revenge of the Transformers versus the trees.
The trees versus the Transformers, which would be actually pretty cool.
That would
you know,
be pretty cool.
But I don't know. Somebody who, you know, I'd love to see, you know, Kevin Smith. Kevin Smith, and he could direct all the dialogue, although he doesn't direct actors that well. He just casts people who can deliver his dialogue.
Who directed The Wrestler again?
That was Aronofsky.
Okay, Aronofsky and Michael Bay team up Aronofsky's on that RoboCop remake, isn't he? So,
I don't know, but he's also really high on himself, too. I mean, did you see The Fountain? What was going on with that movie?
I long to see The Fountain.
Yeah, it's not that good. I fell asleep in it. It's hysterical. I fell asleep. It's a 90-minute movie. I fell asleep four times.
I know, but he had The Wrestler and he had Requiem for a Dream. Wasn't that a bit of a step up?
Those are good movies, sure. Well, The Wrestler was okay. I was not gaga over The Wrestler the way some people were. Mm-hmm. I mean, people were, again, like, oh, it was awesome, and it could do no wrong. Yeah. But no, I mean, I thought Requiem was an excellent, excellent film.
Okay. I haven't been depressed enough to see Requiem, actually.
it's worth checking out. It definitely is. We got to get to movies here because we completely derailed and actually had a cogent discussion about film. That never happens on this show. Emily, you're raising the bar way too high on this show. The next one we got to talk about is Band Slam, where a high school misfit comes to a new school and manages a band. He hopes to make it big in a local contest.
Best film of the year.
Oh, really?
How big is this whole Band Slam thing around here?
Texas high school football big.
I'm Charlotte. Nice to meet you.
I've known you since fifth grade.
Oh.
The winner gets an actual liquor deal.
Sweet.
I'm starting a band.
You gotta be cool. You got to behave. seems like you're trying way too hard to be Flea from the Red Hot Chili Peppers.
I don't even like Flea.
Yeah, what's your name? Bug?
You know what? I would have preferred if they would have just handed Vanessa Hudgens the camera and sent her in her hotel room and saw what came from that. Because I'm a bigger fan of her earlier work than what came out of this movie.
Yeah. This,
it, and the thing is, I'm a Disney Channel apologist. I'll watch Disney Channel stuff, and they got a formula, I'll admit, but they do it very, very well. Whereas Band Slam was like, let's take some Disney Channel stars and put a Disney Channel-ish plot together, but then darken it up and edge it up, and they just do a terrible job at it. And it's really not a good movie. So that's the way it is. It's Band Slam sucks. That's the way it is.
Totally sucks.
Well, yeah. Well, it just sucks. There was, I think a movie got last year. Neil said couldn't suck more. But it's not that bad. This isn't. There's worse movies out there. I sent you a list at one point of some of the worst movies this year.
Right. They're all in my queue, by the way.
You're in for some pain. Speaking of pain, let's talk about the next one. I'm going to actually flip-flop these around. The Time Traveler's Wife. A woman falls in love with a man who randomly travels through time.
I've been waiting for Henry my entire life. It's you. I wrote down every time that you came to visit me. You told me that you go back to the same places a lot.
Yeah, it's like gravity. Big events pull you in.
I was a big event.
Is it too weird?
No. I think it's kind of magical.
Will you marry me?
No. I didn't mean that. Of course.
They didn't screen this in Columbus, which is where I could have gone to Cleveland to go see it, but I was like, I'm not driving 2 hours to see this movie. I'll do it for like Land of the Lost. Are you interested in seeing this?
I was, and then I saw the trailer, and I'm still kind of interested in it, but I think it might be more of a rent for me.
Really? Well, I mean, are you... to me, this thing just screams The Notebook with time travel.
Yeah, and I'm not... I actually really hated The Notebook because I thought it was overdramatic. I guess I'm not a big chick flick person, but I mean, I love films like Once, and I even kind of like Juno. But I like those indie romantic things, but I'm not too big on the mainstream.
Well, there's also, see, I'm not a big fan of Nick Cassavetes, who did The Notebook, but I like a good romantic comedy, you know, something like
Pretty
Woman.
Well, when it's
good,
it works, but there's a lot of romantic comedies like 27 Dresses or The Proposal that I thought just recycled the same thing over and over and over.
Well, if you put a Katherine Heigl in anything, it's going to be bad, but I like The Proposal was okay. I mean, I like a good run-of-the-mill romantic comedy. I just, sometimes if I'm annoyed with the person, like Katherine Heigl, I won't, so... Right. I'm going to go see this with my wife, so we'll see how that goes.
I'll see it eventually, of course. I'm not saying that it's going to be like The Proposal. I just think it's going to be a bit of a sappy love story at times.
Oh, that makes sense. I'm pretty sure it will be. let's move on to The Goods with Jeremy Piven is funny in this movie that wasn't screened for me.
There's no smoking on airplanes.
I know. It's ridiculous, isn't it?
If you like that, I'll have to report you to the FAA.
Stacy, did you know that in 1969, when smoking was allowed on all flights, we put a man on the moon?
I had no idea.
And it starts with ashtrays, and it ends with all of our precious freedoms being stripped away. But we don't have to take it. We can say enough injustice. We can smoke one for America!
Who are you?
I'm done ready. And I got the goods.
And that about sums it up. I haven't seen it. It looks very funny. It's about a guy who has to help a car sales, do a big 4th of July car sales thing. And I've heard some good things about it. I've heard it's not as good as it could be, but it's still funny. Jeremy Piven is funny. It's got a lot of funny people in it. Ving Rhames is funny in it, apparently. But they didn't screen it for me, so it has to be it's going to be a preemptive suck for me.
Okay.
That's what we do with movies. You're familiar with the whole preemptive suck.
I listen thing. Every week. Preemptive suck.
Yeah, that's right. We've been taken to the task on that, but you know what? If you're not going to show it to us, the heck with you. We're going to tell you your movie sucks.
And so. You can always go back on it.
Yeah. I mean, I'll go see it and I'll post a review on the Fat Guy site. So that's how it works. That's how I roll. So we got to go to a break.
Oh, awesome.
Miles of hard road, 33 years of tough luck,
44 skulls buried in the ground, crawling down through the muck.
And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies, and we are here talking about, we did all the reviews, we got through the five movies that are coming out this weekend, the ones that of course I recommend are District 9 and Ponyo, and Band Slam, maybe if you're like 12 and a girl, you might want to see this, because Vanessa Hudgens does not get naked in this movie at all, which is disappointing to me. What do you mean, yay?
I don't know. I'm just not really into that sort of thing.
Well, that's okay. You're allowed to not be into that. I am totally into seeing Vanessa. I mean, out of, you know, there was that whole photo scandal that came out last week. And in the interest of journalism and integrity, I found the pictures and I examined them.
Mm, you're the best journalist. You should be, you should replace
four or five times.
You got to replace.
And I also, well, I also did the due diligence and found the images of what's her name, the Ashley Greene from Twilight.
Ooh, there are pictures of her like that? No, I'm not up on my naked actresses.
Well, no, because what's funny about her thing is, you know, like Vanessa Hudgens, nobody cares about her pictures because they're nothing more or worse than what happened 2 years ago, the original photo scandal. And I wouldn't be surprised if they were like actually from the same batch. You know, I don't know. That girl just digs taking pictures of herself naked, and I support that. But this Ashley Greene, she came out these pictures, and she looks great. She looks phenomenal naked. But her lawyers went out to like Perez Hilton and TMZ and everything is like, no. And they said she took these pictures. They came flat out admitted it because due to copyright law, by making something by operation of law, it becomes copyrighted. So they took these pictures. So they're like, she took these pictures. She owns these pictures. So now you can't put them up because she owns a copyright. So, but I found them.
It's just an entire industry I don't particularly understand.
Yeah, count, you know, that's okay.
It's the Catholic in me, Kevin. No, I'm kidding.
The Catholic in me. You'd think the Catholic in you would want to see that because, you know, get away from the repression and everything.
Well, actually, no, I just, we don't have to get on that tangent.
Okay. We'll leave religion discussions for later times. Huh? Let's talk now about the box office. And last week, G.I. Joe won. And I actually predicted that it wouldn't make that much money. And it did and it didn't. I thought it was going to be in the 30s to 40s. And it made $54.7 million. Mm-hmm. With Julie and Julia coming in with $20 million right after it. And then a perfect getaway somewhere way down near the bottom.
It made as much as Terminator almost, didn't it? Or a little bit more.
But see, Terminator was awful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it was the only other movie out there. Terminator, it was a much fresher field. Like in May, you had, you know, Wolverine, you had Star Trek, and then you had Angels and Demons and Terminator. I mean, that was it. Whereas now you've got everything, and you're going against Harry Potter and still Transformers and all these other things. What did you think of G.I. Joe? You went and saw it, didn't you?
Yeah, I did. I thought it was better than Transformers 2, primarily because I don't remember if Neil said it on Film School Reject Radio or Fat Guys at the Movies, but I think he was right about how it was good because it was shorter than Transformers 2. it wasn't a great film, and I thought it had the best use of flashbacks ever. Oh, wow, that was just...
There were a lot of flashbacks.
I know,
in
it was
movie.
Really badly done, but I kind of wish that if they wanted to go cheesy, they would have gone all the way. I kind of wish they had gone either really cheesy or really, you know, fine and serious, you know. But I think the director and the writer sort of had a confusion. You know? Steven Sommers had missed something along the way that the actors and the screenwriter obviously had caught on, that this wasn't a serious film.
Well, you know what I think's funny is I watched the old G.I. Joe cartoon on Saturday mornings, and I thought it was a very, very, it was literally a live action version of that. In the sense that it had crappy dialogue, it had crappy acting, you know. I mean, it wasn't big on story. You can't say these are awesome stories from the old G.I. Joe show, and neither was this. And it was all about action and explosions. It was more appropriate for kids because one thing that was pointed out, and again, listening to your Cue the Film podcast about Transformers, the problem with Transformers was, it was still everyone's like, oh no, it's for kids, but you know, it had drug humor in it and had really, you know, and it really kind of pushed the line on sex.
Robot testicles?
Robot. Well, you know, balls can be funny to kids, but but pot brownies, maybe not. You know, and that lost me there. And then the sort of the beer commercial mentality of Transformers 2, which they didn't have in G.I. Joe. G.I. Joe reminded me of like the Fantastic Four movies. Did you like those?
I only saw Fantastic Four 2, and my issue with that kind of was similar to G.I. Joe, where it didn't seem to know what it wanted it to do, but I had a lot more fun in G.I. Joe than I did in Fantastic Four 2.
Okay, no, that's fair. I mean, I like the Fantastic Four movies, but I also saw them with my kids, and they were much more... They were actually very true to the original 60s nature of the comics. Everyone's like, oh, they're so goofy and campy. And I'm like, have you read this Fantastic Four from the 60s? Maybe not now, but you know, back when Stan Lee was doing it, that they were very true to that sort of flavor. And G.I. Joe, same thing. Very true to that Saturday morning cartoon mentality. So,
but how campy was it? I mean, by the end of the last half hour, that wasn't campy at all. But still, well, the climax kind of fell on its face.
I don't know if it was campy as much as it had its campy moments, sort of like an Indiana Jones kind of thing. But the thing that was interesting about G.I. Joe and the box office, it did well, but it was soft in its predictions. Everyone was like, oh, and then like if you looked at the predictions from Friday night and Saturday morning, they were like, it's going to make 60 plus million. And then they scaled it back to 56 million. And then when the actuals actually came in, it was under 55 million. So it did well, but it didn't do incredible. And I take that as a victory because they didn't screen it for critics. And so I think, you know, Transformers 2 got awful reviews and it made up $400 million.
Yeah, but I think what G.I. Joe, unfortunately, it came out in August and maybe a lot of people had said, you know, we've already seen our dumb action film of the year. And to tell you the truth, the trailers really didn't look that great in the first place.
Yeah.
So, well, I'm not surprised that it got only 50 million.
I think there's more in common with G.I. Joe to like Wolverine and sort of like the same kind of movie. I thought Wolverine and G.I. Joe were very, very similar in the sense they had dumb stories, but it was just a big dumb action movie.
But again, I felt that Wolverine tried to be more than a big dumb action film. And it just had really lazy storytelling. Yeah. And it had some guy going, no. Oh.
There's nothing, every movie needs a guy going, no. J5. What do you think is going to win this weekend? Band Slam?
Yeah, Band Slam's going to get number one. It's going to outgross Transformers 2. It's going to be awesome.
It's going to make $400 billion this weekend alone.
$300 trillion. It's going to be great. But seriously, I think District 9 is probably going to take the cake, and I think we're going to see G.I. Joe fall to maybe about third or fourth place, to tell you the truth. Or maybe,
I think G.I. Joe's going to tumble fast.
Yeah, because I don't think it's like Star Trek. Unlike Star Trek, it doesn't have that rewatchability factor. So yeah. I think, in my opinion, it might even pull off. I'm just pulling things out of my butt here, but I think it might not get any more than 30 million or 25 million this week.
Okay. Yeah, no, you're right. I don't think that's an unreasonable prediction. So, yeah, I think District 9 is going to do well in the 30s, maybe 40s. It's getting a lot of buzz, and I know a lot of people are really 40s? Excited to see it. Yeah, well, maybe. I don't know if it's going to be...
I'm sorry.
District 9?
I'm tempted to say, like, 60s. I don't know.
Really? You think it's going to do better than G.I. Joe?
Yeah.
District 9? An R-rated movie?
But I think there's been a lot of more promotion about it, and I think a week with Band Slam and The Time Traveler's Wife, I think... Okay, I guess I'm disproving my own point, but I think that there are going to be a lot of people who want to go out and see another sci-fi film from Star Trek. And while I think that The Time Traveler's Wife and Band Slam will take some of their audience away, I think it will do at least slightly better than G.I. Joe, because I think people are longing for something that is sci-fi or has aliens in it. And
that sci-fi with a little bit more intelligence to it?
Yeah, that's what I mean. Kind of like how Star Trek, you know, I think people are looking for something similar to Star Trek where there are actually aliens in a more intelligent light, you know?
Yeah, see, I don't think Band Slam's going to do well at all. I think Band Slam's going to come in like at 6. And The Goods isn't going to do well. It's not a wide enough release. Time Traveler's Wife, I think, is going to surprise people. You're going to see a good 25 to 30 million from Time Traveler's Wife, just because I know a lot of people, not my circle of friends, but I know a lot of people who are interested to see that movie. And, you saw Julie and Julia did well in this level. And The Time Traveler's Wife is much more of an August film. So I think that's going to have a better shot, but I still think District 9 is going to win. I think $60 million is a little bit, that's ambitious, but we'll see.
I'm feeling ambitious.
Well, good. Ambition way. We got to quickly, before we wrap up this segment, we've got a Fat Guy 5 we want to throw down, which is in honor of District 9, 5 awesome alien flicks. And the ones we came up in no particular order, although they're almost in alphabetical order. The first one I want to say, Alien. If you're talking alien flicks, you cannot discount Alien. One of the scariest movies, works as a horror movie, works as an action movie, works as a sci-fi movie. If you've never seen it on the big screen, if you have a shot, do it, because it's brilliant. And it's a haunted house movie in space. It's incredible. So, do you agree? Or is this one of those you don't like?
Okay, I have a confession.
Okay. You've never seen Alien.
Or The Godfather. I've never seen Alien, no.
Really? Oh, have you seen the sequels, though? Have you seen, like, Aliens?
No.
And you haven't seen anything? You haven't even seen, like, AVP or anything like that?
No.
Oh, get off the show.
I know. I'm leaving right now. No.
No, Alien, it's worth checking out. Although, you know, if you ever get it, like I said, if you get a chance to see it on the big screen, if you ever see it like playing at some place, go check it out.
And then I can get excited about Avatar.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Although that's not the same. No, Aliens was, Ridley Scott did Alien, the first one.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Not James Cameron. The second one, we got to move on. The second one is Starship Troopers. That's a guilty pleasure of mine. Paul Verhoeven's sort of alien splatterfest from the mid to late 90s. Have you seen this one?
I've seen parts of this one, and I actually saw it on, I think it was cut, censored down for it, because it was on TV.
It's military science fiction that's fun. Also, let's throw it down for Cloverfield, which was last year's big alien movie with the point of view camera. What are your two that you want to bring on the list?
I only cut like the first hour of Cloverfield, because I bought it on DVD and I haven't got to see the rest. I get really entertained by the second part of it, though, because the first part, you know, you get all these bit of a snobby kids just keep complaining about crap. It was definitely interesting, and I love the idea about how it is an alien, spoiler alert, and how you don't find that out until the end.
Well, yeah, but it's pretty clear when it's a giant monster.
Oh, yeah.
It could be an alien.
Plus, there's
it's not
that
big of a spoiler.
I think it looks like there's, if you look really closely at the last scene, you can see something falling from the sky.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, you can. Yep. But your other two, the two you put on the list, were...
Now, these are strictly the ones I could think about at the last minute.
In our vicious show prep that we do.
In our vicious throw show prep that took like 3 hours, you know, we did late lifts, we did everything. Men in Black, just because I am a child of the 90s, and sorry, but it was awesome. And
that's allowed.
What about, could I change the fifth one?
Sure.
What about I Am Legend? Wait, no, I don't want
to. No, that wasn't Alien.
Never mind, yeah. I'm sorry. the fifth one would definitely, the fourth one, Men in Black, because you had the big slug. It was pretty awesome, you know, Will Smith, cool. And
sure.
The fifth one I could only think of at the last minute was Independence Day, because...
Yeah.
Will Smith again.
It's an awesome movie.
And
Independence
campy,
Day is exciting.
And pretty campy, and yet the camp works.
Yeah. Well, and it also was an event movie, and I like Roland Emmerich's stuff, so...
Even though he's done the exact same film, like, 5 times.
Well, yeah, with the exception of 10,000 BC, which was awful.
Yeah, I wasn't even a big fan of The Day After Tomorrow, but that's another story.
Yeah, we'll talk about that on a different show. but we got to go to a break. When we come back, we're going to do the DVD roundup and get out of here.
Okay. Welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies. It's time for the DVD roundup. Kevin.
That was my sound effect. Yeah.
I know. It's classic. It's like podcasting 3.0 and radio 3.0, where we are our own sound effects.
I think Ben Burtt is going to sample that and use it in his future works.
You better hope so.
I hope so. I do hope so. I'm going to start, since I always have a whole ton of things to talk about. The first one is 17 Again. Let me just get that out of the way. 17 Again is on DVD. That's with Zac Efron. You're
Who
not
you have a
big...
man crush on?
What was that?
Who do you have a man crush on?
I apparently do. He is real... what's weird is everyone, all the girls, he's so cute and everything. And he like has his shirt off like in all these basketball movies. he's got a weird looking frame. I mean, he really looks scrawny. He looks like he's scrawny, but has like these shoulders. He's a weird looking dude. I'm probably the only one in America who thinks that, but that's just the way it is. But the Blu-ray does promise to be packed with Zach. So if you're into that sort of thing, if you want to bring this home and be packed with Zach, you can watch 17 again. The other one I want to talk about, and these two are sort of like, these are sort of guilty pleasure, fun things, throwback to my childhood, sort of. The first one is Super Friends, the lost episodes, the old Super Friends TV show. They made a whole bunch of these episodes that they didn't air originally on Saturday morning back in the early 80s. And they've since aired on like Cartoon Network and stuff like that. But you can get them now on DVD. There's like 24 episodes. It's a 2-disc set. Lots of fun. I watch it with my kids. And we still do not know where Gleek gets his bucket. So that's a joke for people of the 80s. And since you said you're a child of the 90s, this might be good for you. The Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 25th Anniversary Movie Collection.
Well, I've already seen the first Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Well, they've done four of them. They did Turtles 1.
I know. I've seen the first two. I'm sorry.
Yeah, well, there's Secret of the Ooze, and then the third one is Turtles in Time, and then they did the CGI. All four movies are in this set, and it comes with this like sort of collectible disc case with that looks like a sewer. And what's awesome about it is it comes with ninja masks and temporary tattoos. So you have the four different ninja mask colors, and I showed it with my kids, and we're all wearing our ninja masks while we were watching cool. Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. So what's your pick of the week, Emily?
Well, is this the week that 90210 season 1 comes out?
Yes, yeah.
Because is that the reboot? Because that's just really beautiful stuff, man. Teenage angst classic. It's good to know that our kids are going to grow up learning all about a bunch of rich kids and how they're all pregnant or something, all the men are
like pregnant. We don't have enough of 90210. Don't we have like the OC and and Laguna Beach and
what's the Secret Life of an American Teenager? Or oh wow, that I don't even want to know.
No, Secret Life
Why
of an American Teenager,
that's
the one about the pregnant girl, and that's ABC Family. Yeah. So it's not as sordid as like 90210 is. Mm-hmm. It's not
okay,
very well acted
show,
either.
So I'm really racist, but or prejudiced.
Okay.
But I think you gotta buy Starman because apparently, according to you, it was one of the last great John Carpenter films.
Yeah, in the mid '80s, Jeff Bridges, and it's on Blu-ray. So, you know, not that it's a Blu-ray movie. It's funny because they release movies on Blu-ray, and speaking of the turtles, the turtles masks, my mascot, my son Ben, just wandered into the studio with his ninja mask on. So just to let you know. Starman was. There's some movies that release on Blu-ray that you're like, this is a great movie to release on Blu-ray, and it makes sense to watch it again on Blu-ray. But then like some of them they'll re-release on Blu-ray, like Bruce Almighty, or Spinal Tap, which is an awesome movie. But why
should it be on Blu-ray?
It doesn't need to be on Blu-ray because it's like was shot on 16mm film, and so you're basically getting grainy film in high definition. But you do get, but Starman is on Blu-ray, which is awesome.
Awesome.
And then, well, let's talk. The stinker of the week would be. I just threw this in there. This could be a good movie or not, but I said Moonwalking, the Michael Jackson story.
I just saw that. I wanted to. Yeah, that looks really exciting.
I'm
Michael
just
Jackson.
So sick of hearing about him.
What?
He died 2 months ago, and they haven't buried his body yet. Not that it's going to rot or decompose or anything, because it's made of plastic. But but I'm so sick of hearing about
Michael Jackson.
Yeah.
I feel bad for Farrah Fawcett. I mean, she just got the shaft.
I know. Well, see, the thing was,
she had to die when Michael Jackson died, and Michael Jackson just had to take away all the publicity.
Well, it was almost like, you know, Farrah Fawcett died, and everyone was like, oh my gosh, and then Michael Jackson's like, oh, I want some of this publicity too. Give me some drugs. You know, I mean, well, first of all, I think Michael Jackson was a creep anyway. I've gone on record with that. I don't care if that makes me politically incorrect to say, but the guy, at the very least, he was wildly inappropriate around children and then paid off the families. So I had no remorse when this guy died. I mean, he was a creep. So there, I've said it. You can send your hate mail to fatguys@filmschoolrejects.com if you really want to.
I don't like it when people die, but I think there are better movies, news stories to talk about, you know.
Especially 2 months after the fact, you know.
Exactly, yeah.
All right. Well, we gotta wrap things up. We've got the review wrap-up, Band Slam. I said sucks, District 9. I said rocks. The Good, Live Cells, Sell Hard, and The Time Traveler's Wife both get a preemptive suck because they didn't show it to us. And Ponyo gets a totally rocks. Next week, we're going to be talking about Inglourious Bastards, Quentin Tarantino's return, post-grad, and shorts. Thanks again to Emily McFadden from Cue the Film podcast. What's the website again?
This is how unprofessional we are. Cuethefilm.blogspot.com, but you can also find us on iTunes.
Awesome. So check that out. If you want to go get in touch with us, just go to fatguysinthemovies.com and all the information's there.
Yay!